Hello, this is your host, Sonata Allison, and welcome back to the Parallel Podcast, where we talk about sexuality as it should be. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Parallel Podcast. Hope you guys are doing well today. I'm so glad that the sun is out later now. I don't know where you live right now, but shout out to the sun. I love the sun. And yes, now it's not as dark at night, and I love that. Now, that time change that day, I'm still tired from 3 days ago, okay? So, but I hope you guys are recovering from this time change and enjoying more sunlight. So, as you guys can see, we'll be talking about the sex talk, what most of us missed out on in our childhood. Kristen does a wonderful job of speaking about her program, the importance of why people need to be having the sex talk with their children, and, you know, the intricacy of that, like why the silence might be an issue for those children, what the benefits are of having these conversations, why parents are not having the conversation, and just really a really good resource that she has built for Christian families to talk about a taboo subject in our community. So really enjoyed having this conversation with her, and we're gonna go ahead and get right into it. Hey, hello, Kristen. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for asking. Excited awesome. To be here.
Yes, I'm also very excited about this conversation. People ask me a lot about this topic, and I can give them like random books and such. But I think it's awesome that this is kind of like your specialty. So I'm glad to have you on. So when I have people on the podcast for the first time, I ask them this question or one similar to it. What is something you believe to be true about God and why?
Ooh, such a cool question. I love it. Something I believe to be true about God is that he sees us in our darkest moments, and he sees us in our brightest moments, if you will, and he loves us equally in both, and he speaks to us equally in both. However, I believe that it's easier to hear him in those darker parts because we are searching a bit more fervently, and to be frank, we're probably more afraid. And I praise God that that is still true, that even though he loves us equally in both of those places in our life, that he does seek those searching in the dark because they're searching. Mm. And he is good to respond. He is gracious to respond, and he can even meet us in those places. And that's really beautiful.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Oh, man, he's so good. I could talk about him all day, but we're going to talk about some other things today. So tell the people who you are and what you do, and then we'll hop into it.
Okay, sure. So my name is Kristen Miele. I have a master's of science in community health. I have an undergraduate degree in community health as well. So I've worked in public health for many years, primarily related to sexual health, which is something that really the Lord did in my life. That was not something I was seeking out or going for. And I have been married for almost 11 and a half, almost 12 years. I have a daughter. She's 5. We live in Columbus, Ohio. And I started Sex Ed Reclaimed in November of 2021 after returning to the States from the overseas mission field. And it was all very directed by God.
Wow. Beautiful. Yes. So, I definitely love this topic, and I think it's so important. Most of the people I have on, I ask them, like, what's been your experience with sex education? And it's usually like nothing, right? Nothing, right? Or misinformation. So This is why I think it's so important for us to have this conversation. And even if there's at some point where you can think of like a statistic or anything that would help people understand like how this is not happening. But why do you even think we should talk to kids about sex? Why, if everyone's going to probably have sex at one point in their life, why even have the conversation?
Well, I think part of it is, you just said it, that many people are going to engage in the act of sex. I also think that I believe that God created us in such a way that we are meant to glorify him in all aspects of our life. And that includes dating, relationships, sex, and sexuality. And of course, we fail in all of those regards, but we tend to focus so much on discipling our kids and encouraging others in areas of struggle or certain sin issues. And we almost avoid this one. Like, this one's almost too sensitive. It's too intimate, too close to the heart, maybe too awkward. There was no model for it in the past. And so we just avoid it. But what that does is it leaves this big gap for people, particularly the next generation, our children, young people, in sex, sexuality, and gender. And who fills that gap? Well, the world fills it really well. They have like a flood of information that they could pour right into that gap to help kids try to understand sex, sexuality, and gender from their perspective. And their perspective is very flesh focused. It's very much a meeting needs and desires of the flesh now. And we know that those, as Christians, we know that those don't actually meet our deepest needs or desires, and that they're not good. Like, our desires are not holy, right? In many ways. And so we need to speak about this because people aren't, and that leaves a gap, which then the world speaks into. And because we all have questions about this topic, and we're all made as beings with this nature. Like, we have this nature of female and male, of interest in sex, of conversations and interest in sexuality. And so we have to speak into those because God speaks into them. So why aren't we?
Yeah. That's a great question right there, that last part. And as you were talking, I was thinking, like, yeah, the point you said, like, it's awkward. So do you know, I don't know if you've talked to like parents directly about this, but why are they not having the conversation? Why do you think they're avoiding it?
They're avoiding it for a few reasons. One reason is because they simply don't know how, they don't know how to talk about this, which is why really part of the reason I developed Sex Ed Reclaimed, to help them understand how to talk about it. Another reason is that they're scared. Fear and lack of control drives a lot of decision-making in the world and in Christians. We have to be honest with ourselves about why we make the decisions we make. And so much of it comes from fear and you know, trying to control a situation. And when you enter sex into the conversation, there is fear, and there's also fear that you're going to lose that control, that you don't know what to say or how to say it, and how to make sure it's age appropriate. And a lot of parents have a fear related to that of, I'm going to take away my child's innocence. I was just talking to a guy the other day who has four kids. He's a Christian. And he said, your program, your ministry looks so amazing. It looks so great, but I want to keep my kids in the sandbox. And I just thought, I have to speak to that. I had to say something, even though I've never met this person. We were just speaking on the phone. He works for a large kind of ministry in the States. And he was so like adamant that he wanted to preserve his child's innocence. And I think many parents come at this conversation with that idea. And that is a myth. You do not take away their innocence by speaking to them about their bodies or dating or puberty or consent, respect, abuse. You don't take away their innocence by speaking about these topics. What takes away their innocence is that they're born sinful and that they have fleshly desires and that they live in this world. Like, that's what takes it away. And sure, you're not going to talk to a four-year-old about the act of sex. Like, that just isn't, there's something that doesn't sit right about that. They don't need to know that at that age. Developmentally, they're not ready to hear that. But you do need to talk to them about proper names. Like, this is your vagina. This is the vulva. This is the penis. And even that alone, there are so many parents who, as they just listen to that, are uncomfortable with those words. And they're just words for the names of your body that God created. And so what that says is not something about the child, but it says something, speaking back to that parent's fear. It says something about the parent, their lack of sex ed, what they were taught as a child, maybe slang terms in that situation they were taught instead of appropriate terms. And that teaches actual shame. Like, that teaches that there's something wrong with that part of the body, so much so that we can't even call it what it is. But children knowing the names of their body parts is not only good, like there's nothing immoral about it, but it also teaches them to verbally affirm or acknowledge when something inappropriate is happening. So like, a little boy at school showed me his penis. they're not going to be able to say that if they don't know what that is and if they mm-hmm. don't know what it's called. But now they can call that out, and you can now speak into that and talk to school administrators, talk to daycare, whatever it is, about the situation, because your child could verbally acknowledge it since you gave them the language for it. Language is important. Mm-hmm. And parents are so afraid of taking their kids out of the sandbox or stealing their innocence, when in reality, that's not going to happen from conversations about sex ed. When that's going to happen is when they're exposed to porn at age 10. Like, that's when it's going to happen. And not if, but when. And so we need to be more prepared and more willing to have these conversations with them, because they will find the answers elsewhere if we don't answer for them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's also what I found when I did kind of like my capstone of my master's about sex education in America. Oh, cool. And when I saw that, it was helpful to deter people from abuse. When they hear children using those words, they're like, oh, someone's actually talking to them about sex. I'm actually putting myself in danger now, because this kid is having conversations with adults. So this is like very serious. I think a lot of people are like, oh, they'll figure it out later. But like, you can avoid very serious things happening to children when you just have these conversations throughout their lifetime. So yeah, definitely think that's so important. And you mentioned too, like, obviously you're not going to tell a kid about the act of sex when they're 4 years old. So how do we temper that information to children?
Right. One way is to use opportunities around you. So for example, if you're with a 4-year-old or a 14-year-old and you walk into a store and there's a kind of a obvious transgender person there, and you recognize it, your 4-year-old certainly recognizes it already, your 14-year-old is recognizing it, you're recognizing it, you can talk about that with them. Mm. Like, hey, did you notice that that person appeared like a man, but actually was most likely a woman? Like, how did that make you feel? You might ask the 14-year-old if they know any other transgender students at school, or if they know of any friends, or if they've heard of any celebrities. You might ask a 14-year-old, you know, what do you think about that? Do you think transitioning is a good idea for people? 4-year-old, you might say, you know, we believe God created us male and female, and that was good. Not everyone believes that. And some people struggle. And so they try to change their gender, but we can't actually ever really change our gender. We can't change who God made us to be entirely. And so you kind of gauge based on their age, of course, but also you're the parent of this child theoretically. And so you know them, and you know how much information they're able to take in. You know how curious they are about things. You know generally like what's going on in their world. But even if you don't, or feel that you don't, use opportunities that you both are exposed to. Maybe the news is on and they're talking about Roe v. Wade and how it was overturned, and you turn to your, you know, teenager and you say, hey, do you know what we believe about abortion? And they say, oh yeah, I know. And you say, well, what is it? And they say, oh, abortion's wrong. And you say, well, okay, but like, why? And you just kind of figure out, what do they actually think about abortion? Do they know anybody who's sexually active? And maybe they'll be closed off and they won't tell you, but maybe you have a relationship where, no, actually, they'd probably share that information with you. And so, of course, it's somewhat dependent on your connection to this child. I'm not going to talk about the exact same things I talk about with my child as I would with like my neighbor, right? A child who's a neighbor. Mm-hmm. But because I do believe that role does fall to the parents. But if a child who's my neighbor is like doing something inappropriate, I might say, hey, do you know that it's actually not okay to put your hands down your pants when you're outside? And they would respond. And I might say, you know, you can get germs in that part of your body and you can spread those to others. And we don't want to do that. Or if the child's, you know, the neighbor's 15, obviously that conversation is going to be different as to like their hands being in their pants. So yeah. Anyway, I really think parents have more ability than they think that they do. Mm-hmm. But it's just getting over that fear and getting over that nervousness about just saying it. And again, that probably relates to their own personal experience growing up with or without, most likely without, any sort of natural conversations about this topic area. But that can change. That doesn't have to be the same. We can stop that cycle of silence and start to engage with our children. I will say it's way easier when they're younger, because they're just so much more likely to share honestly, to kind of bounce back, to go play, to listen. But that doesn't mean that teenagers are like past it, right? Mm-hmm. Like we need to start no matter what today with whatever age our children are. I've heard wonderful conversations from parents who are parenting 30, 40, 50 year olds. Like they are, you know, parenting older kids and they still have good conversations. And they acknowledged, hey, we never talked to you about this ever, but we want to talk to you now. Like, what do you think about what's happening in the world around us or whatever? And so it is always possible and it's always good because it's an opportunity to glorify God, to talk about his purposes and to help us love each other well.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you're saying that too, it sounds like a lot of it comes from a parent's experience. So how would they get over that fear and to be able to engage in these conversations with the kids?
I think the first thing a parent can do is to pray about it. I think there has to be a certain vulnerability in prayer of saying, hey, like, dear Lord, I don't really know what to say about this. And I don't even, if I'm honest, know what you say. And so the Holy Spirit might really lead that parent to reading the Bible, to studying something like Song of Solomon or studying relationships in the Bible where God speaks more clearly about marriage and sex. Or it might mean that this parent is driven to really talk to their spouse about, hey, this is my background. I know this was your background. Like, what are we supposed to do now? We've never really talked about it, honestly and intentionally, with what we're going to do with our little kids. And so I think the first step is prayer, because that could lead different people into different directions. And I think that's okay, as long as they're listening to the Lord's voice and his leanings in that. Mm-hmm. The second step is to just start. Like, when we're afraid on, let's say, a roller coaster, granted, we don't have control of the roller coaster, but once it starts going down the hill, like, you're kind of getting over it, right? Like, okay, yeah, it's happening. It's fast. Like, it was a little scary at first, but I'm able to do this. I used to have a great fear of public speaking. Who knew I would speak in huge groups about sex, like one of the most maybe awkward potential topics to talk about, but I love it. But I had to get over that at first. I had to like move past that through practice. And so start with small opportunities where you can talk to your kid about their body or dating, depending on their age, right? Or, this thing that just came across the news, like I said earlier, or a social media post you both saw, or the neighbor, you know, whatever it is, use those small opportunities to get practice in. And if you feel like you failed and you're scared to try again, know that all of us like understand that is a normal place to be in as a parent. I think that's a natural part of parenting in general, but that doesn't mean that we don't stop parenting, right? We try again. I also think a big fear diverter is to just own it, to say like, hey, I don't really know how to talk about this, or I feel kind of weird talking about this, or I've never talked to you about this before. But particularly if your kids are a little bit older, or you want to talk to a parent and you're an older child now, just acknowledging the elephant in the room of, I don't know how to, I'm scared, I'm nervous, we've never done this before, but, and going for it. And I think the words will come with practice and you'll start to feel more comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. And you saying that last part too reminded me of the scripture that says like, when the time comes, the Holy Spirit will give you the word. So
yes,
definitely pointing people to prayer, and obviously good information is really helpful. Yeah. And everything you said was very practical. I think simple. I'd imagine that people hearing that are like, oh, I can do that. I can definitely do that. So
yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah, I think,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I think it's not this like big thing. Like if we build it up in our brain to be such a big thing, just like anything else, it would become almost overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. It can start very small. It could start with a parent who's listening right now, who has a 3-year-old child and who has never taught a 3-year-old maybe appropriate names for their body. Maybe they did teach kind of sillier words like Willy or I don't know, whatever. Insert so many slang terms here.
Right.
But they say now, hey, I haven't told you this, but did you know that that part of your body is called the penis and God made that? And that's where you pee out of and that needs to be cleaned when you bathe. Like, did you know that? Like, just say that. And maybe that feels awkward, but your 3-year-old doesn't care. They don't know. And that will at least help you to get over it. So just kind of start somewhere. even if your words aren't perfect, what your child is mostly going to remember at the end of the day is that you're there about that topic. Like you were there about that particular genre of information. And so they can now go to you with that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think there too, when you're talking about, oh, this is where you pee out of, that could be an opportunity to go way further than you need to. So this might be an obvious answer, but why do you think it is important to temper the information you're giving over a span of time?
Most people can't drink out of a fire hose well, right? And so we don't, with anything, like we shouldn't ideally give all the information right away, especially in such a noisy age where we're constantly coming across so much information about so many topics. Even us as adults recognize we need to like shut off or kind of move away from material for a bit, put our phone away. Like similarly, sex conversations with kids are like that you just offer a little bit and you see what they're doing with it. My daughter asked me recently, and I said she's five. This was when she was four. She was pointing to a picture of herself as a newborn, and you know, her dad's holding her, and she says, "Where did I come from?" And I said, "God made you." That's all I said. God made you. And she said, "Yeah, but where did I come from?" And I said, "Well, you were in mommy's uterus." And she was like, "In your belly?" And I was like, "It's close to my stomach, but it looks like it's in my belly." And she said, "But then how did I get out?" And I actually had started filming because I wondered if it would go here. And it's on my social media page. Awesome. Actually, I posted it. Cool. And I said, "You got out through the vagina." Like I told her that. It's not like she was like, "Wait, what? No way. Are you kidding?" Because she's four, right? She doesn't think about that. And so it wasn't this shocking information to her. She was just like, "Oh." And I told her that, you know, women have to push. Like I had to push. And she said, "Okay." And then she went and played. Like that was it. You know, there weren't any more questions, but I was really gauging it by her reactions and seeing if she had more questions, if she wanted to know more. And you can, like I said, literally watch that on my social media and how that played out. But it doesn't have to be this big thing. Like I had a person once tell me, I think it was about a friend of theirs or an acquaintance or something. His son asked him, "What is sex?" And I think his son was between 7 and 10. And he started explaining the whole, like all of it, right? And just like full fire hose, all the information. He just jumped right in there. And the kid at the end of it, looking totally confused, was just like, "Oh, so do I mark M or F?" Like he was just trying to fill out a form of his sex. Oh my God. He didn't realize it meant male or female. And meanwhile, this dad has explained all of it. So really just gauge what, you know, you can always ask, "Oh, where did you hear that?" And manage your tone, not like in a like, "Where'd you hear that from?" You know, but like, "Where did you hear that?" Or "What made you ask that?" With a really curious tone, because a child asking about a big topic like being gay doesn't mean suddenly that now they're gay and they want to know if they can date a boy because they're a boy. You know, it just might mean that they heard the word today and they don't know how it's defined. And you could define that for them. That's not going to steal their innocence. That's going to help them inform the situation. They're going to understand more of their world, and they're going to be able to better speak into that world because you are also going to tell them truth, the truth of the gospel, the truth of who Jesus is, the truth of who they're made to be in God. And that's like such an opportunity. And I do wish parents saw it more as an opportunity rather than as like this fearful part of life that they have to walk into. Like it's an opportunity to disciple your kids in a different way than we were often discipled.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So I would ask too, where you were talking about a four-year-old, a three-year-old. Do you think there's an age that it's too soon to start, or when do you think is a best time to start? Is it just like when they're hearing, like when you know they can hear you?
I mean, typically my answer to that, it sounds corny, but it's today, like just start today. If they're one, they're obviously not understanding things, but like practice for yourself, maybe like, just like, okay, like, yeah, that's your vagina. Like mommy's wiping, you know, your butt right now because you pooped. Like just explaining what you're doing, is good. And it does actually mitigate issues around abuse and lack of consent with children. Because it helps children to understand their body And you can use language like, nobody should touch this part of your body, or only your daycare worker can change your diaper. I don't know, whoever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And it helps them to start understanding things. Like when we're pregnant, you're often encouraged as a pregnant person to really talk to your child, like even the father to talk to the child. Of course, they're in your womb, like that seems silly, but they get used to your voice. And it's mm-hmm. shown after kids are born that they actually know what their mother's voice is. They know what their father's voice is. So we're teaching them before they're even born. It sounds silly to be using appropriate language with a kid who can't respond to you yet, but you're teaching them, right? Before they can even talk. And so it's a beautiful opportunity. And that's why I say today, like today is a good place to start. And that doesn't mean you do that every day, but you can certainly begin. And even if your children are already in their teen years, again, just acknowledging the elephant in the room and moving forward from there, it's, mm-hmm. you still have the opportunity. Like there's no time but the present, and we can start now.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. So how do you decide like the age, like what's appropriate for each age? What does that look like?
Yeah. For me, I decided based on experience of teaching. So I have taught in, I want to say thousands of classrooms, but I'll just say hundreds. I have taught in so many classrooms. I've taught parent groups. I've taught on the mission field. I've taught in a different language. I've taught in schools, churches, like foster care settings, like all sorts of places. The list goes on and on. And so for me, my content is developed based on my experience of working with those kids, right? But developmentally, to me, there were some clear markers. So for example, in my curriculum, I developed content for 3 to 6 year olds. The reason I stopped there is because once you get into 5, 6, they're really in the school age and they're starting to be able to understand more. And so at the end of that curriculum, it transitions into a different curriculum, which is 7 to 10 year old. And those are like my early learners, like 1st through 3rd grade. Like again, very similar developmentally, not the exact same. Not every kid is the exact same, but you can kind of group them. And then after that, I have my 11 to 13 year olds, which I call like my preteens, and then 14 to 18. They just seem to fall some natural kind of groupings as I was developing this material. But yes, a 3-year-old is very different really than a 6-year-old in terms of what they can understand. Mm-hmm. I just did that because it was easiest with presenting content that, you know, wouldn't be too spliced up into like every single age. Okay. I think most people who are around kids have some idea of like what that age grouping can understand. But I do think it's really difficult to know if you're in like a large group setting versus one-on-one. And so that's why I say that these conversations ideally happen more one-on-one at home. And you can play my content certainly one-on-one, like right in front of the kid or the student or the child. And that helps to gauge, again, reactions. Like, are they understanding? What are they picking up on? What are they not? But in general, I think those groupings you can kind of play with a little bit in terms of information that you start to like drip out, right? But not the fire hose, and see where they're at. Some 5-year-olds are like, and typically girls are more mature than boys, right? Typically, not always, but like they want more information, and little kids are always asking why. And so it's a great time to start with them because they have the questions, and your response is really what they're looking for, that you're there, that you're answering, even if it's not perfect. Whereas a child who's not asking why yet, you're not going to give them as much information. But responding to their questions, using opportunities around you is a great place to start with any age.
Yeah. And it seems like something you keep highlighting is the importance of like being in tune to your child, like knowing, okay, is this too much? Is this too little? Oh, this is an opportunity for me to teach here. So I think that that's very important, just like having a healthy attachment with your child and knowing how to read them. That's probably like some groundwork right there, just actually knowing who your child is and caring enough to be vulnerable and have any conversation. That's important because sex is not the only conversation parents should be having with their kids.
No, but you're totally right. It does help to form relationship with them. And that's such a good place to be in, like that you get to have that with them and not just about hobbies and interest and family life and school, but about this topic too, and speak into that topic. It's really, honestly, it's fun. Like I love it, of course. That's why I'm continue to, part of the reason I continue to do it, but yeah. It's fun because you get to know where kids are at. I will say though, the one area in this particular question that parents fail in, I would say, is that they don't know how much their kid really does know. So as the kid gets older, like most parents assume their kids just don't have an interest. I hear time and time again, particularly from Christian parents, my kid is, and I'm using this word again because they use it, innocent. They don't know this. And that's just not true. Studies have been done where they ask parents things about sex and sexuality in regards to their kids, and then they ask the kids. And 70, for example, this is one statistic. So I looked at a survey. It was out of the UK. And there was something like 80% of parents thought that their child had never seen any explicit content. And these children were teenagers. Okay. Granted, this survey was at least over 5 years ago, but not that dated. And they then interviewed the kids. And I mean, near 100% of them had seen explicit content. And so it was like almost the opposite of like, all of these parents thought, oh no, these kids haven't seen it yet. I'm pretty positive. Mm-hmm. And there was even a difference between girls and guys. Like they thought, well, maybe my sons have, but not the girls. Like, you know, that's a thing. That is not a thing anymore. Like porn is the great equalizer, the internet, like it's all right there for any gender. It doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl. And so as the researchers did this, they just found that there was such a disparity between what parents thought about their teenagers and what the teenagers actually had already seen, been exposed to, were engaging in. I mean, most parents don't think their kids are having sex, right? But kids are sometimes having sex. Yeah. And that's partially due to the fact that we don't talk about this topic with our parents. Of course, I'm trying to help change that narrative. So that's the only really gap there, is that we can know our kids and we can know them well, but we probably don't know quite as much as we think we do in regards to this topic. They've probably been exposed to more than you think. And I don't just mean porn. I also mean, you know, relationships that look very differently than your family and things like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you were saying that research as well, it reminded me of a study that showed that kids were more likely to delay sex before marriage if their parents talked to them about sexuality. So a lot of these parents think, oh, they're not going to listen to me. They don't even care, but they still have a huge say. So I just want you guys to hear that as well. Like your voice still really matters, regardless of how your kids, how your teenagers respond to you and may make it seem, they actually, your voice still matters. So remember that. Statistics show that you can actually delay that if you have these conversations with your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. There was also another statistic. Let me see if I can remember it. Yeah. So when I was doing my research for my capstone as well, I saw a statistic that showed that there's not really too much of a difference between Christian kids having sex and secular children having sex. Like there's not really too much of a difference. So that's why it's so important to be having these conversations, because like you just said, there's a disparity between what kids are actually doing, what kids are actually seeing, compared to what parents believe. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alrighty. So can you tell the people why you might potentially be a good source for this topic?
Sure. I have been doing this for about 13 years now. Again, I wasn't looking for it. God totally led me into it. When I was studying public health, I was praying for an opportunity to pay for my graduate degree. And I actually was given this offer, this assignment of teaching human sexuality. And that terrified me. And I did not like that. And I figured God made a mistake there, because I'm not supposed to talk about sex, because that is an evil thing. That was where I was 13 plus years ago. And then I had a light bulb moment, maybe like a semester into teaching, where I realized that this topic is actually a good topic. It's just very much touched by sin, and people are rebellious, and people don't honor God. They don't seek to glorify him. They're their own gods, and so they do what they want. And that's what made it this taboo subject, but also like that's what allowed evil into it. And so in that light bulb moment, I began to really relish talking about sex. And I was mostly in front of secular audiences. And so I had to grapple with, okay, I'm going to talk about this factually and from a health perspective, but also I want to speak truth. But not, I can't say Jesus's name. So like, I think I did that. Like, I think I was able to do that. And the Lord challenged me in that. And it was great. It really helped me to grow and to also own my own faith more and what I believed about God and what he says about sex. As time went on, I continued to teach in primarily secular settings, but I was also drawn into Christian settings too. Once, you know, I would meet people and they say, oh, wow, you talk about this? Like, not a lot of people talk about this. Can you come talk to our youth group about it or whatever? And so I've been doing this for a while. I've seen many, many, many students. And most of the time when I see them, their parents are not there. And that actually, I laugh because that actually helps them to be more honest with me, particularly, you know, in years past. They, Christian kids, ask the same questions, basically, that non-Christian kids ask, which is that they see the world around them and they want to know the answers to their questions, just like any other kid. And when I lived abroad, I found the same thing. I thought, well, this is a completely different country. These kids are more actively living in poverty. They speak a different language. They don't have as much access to the internet. Nope, didn't matter. They had the same questions about sex, sexuality, and dating, gender, as kids up here in the States did. And so I have seen so many kids and I've taught them and I know what works. I know what doesn't. I know what age-appropriate information works well with kids at that age because I've actually done it. Like I've actually been in practice doing it and I've actually researched it. I've confirmed with secular and Christian research of like, hey, is this right for these kids? And I have full conviction from the Lord that this is a good thing to talk about, that we need to talk about this, that Satan has been ruling far too long in this area and it needs to end. I also think that the time of the past, like where you had this idea of like the talk or the birds and the bees, like that is dead. Birds and the bees is not a thing. The talk does not work. Purity culture had a lot of negative effects on us. If you grew up in that and experienced that, that's like in the past. Let's look at the current reality, which is that we live in a hypersexualized world with kids who are exposed to so much, and we need to be the voice of truth for them and for imparting the truth to them now, like now, the time is now. And so I know that I can be trusted with this material because the Lord has really prepared me for it because he's been working on me in this. And because I've been doing it for years and I have experience, this is seriously just my niche. Like I am a sex ed teacher and I never thought I would have said that. Like that's not what I wanted to be when I grew up, but day by day, that's what the Lord has grown me in. And that is what I want to be. I want to do that. But I recognize that that's a hard conversation to have with kids. Those conversations can be just really challenging for people who never had them growing up, which was so much of my generation. And so I want to supply those conversations for families to use at home with their kid so that really they can become the hero of the conversation. Like if you're showing your child this information, they're looking at you like, wow, you know this person, or like, you know, which they don't know me personally, but you trust this person, you see this information too. And that's what I hear back from testimonials of people who use the curriculum is they look at me like I'm the expert and I'm not, but really you are, but you're giving me that. And that's what I want. I want kids to talk to their parents. I want them to be able to say, my parents taught me about sex and they did a really good job. And I've never heard that before.
Yes. And this is the perfect time for a plug. Where can the people find you after all that you just said? They need to believe everything you just said.
The people can find me at sexedreclaimed.com. That was a name that came pretty quickly to me in a prayer time with the Lord, just reclaiming that idea of what sexual education looks like. In our world, it looks like a lot of stuff. And some of it's pretty bad, right? And everyone who teaches has an agenda, most of which are terrible, but also most of which aren't centered on the actual truth of the gospel. And mine is. There's nothing like sex ed reclaimed online. And I don't say that in pride or to brag. I just didn't want to create something that was already out there, but I couldn't find it. And so that's why I made this curriculum, is because there was nothing like it anywhere. So in total, there's almost 100 videos of education, but those are tailored for the various ages. There's a workbook included. You get lifetime access. There's parent tips. There's grading rubrics if you want to go that route, if you're homeschooling, certifications. And that's all found on sexedreclaim.com. But I'm also on socials if you want to follow me there first.
Is it the same, Sex Ed Reclaimed?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Yeah. That's where they'll find you. Yeah, I think it's huge to know, to be able to see the person, hear the person who actually created it, hear their heart behind it, and the fact that you actually care about the gospel. There are a lot of self-professed Christians who, you know, stop here, right, at sex, and they just do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably across their lives, you know, they just pick the name and live their life however they decide to. So I'm glad that this is a resource that, you know, your focus is the gospel, but also good information. So definitely want to encourage you guys to check her stuff out. I plan to. So, is there any closing remarks you want to have for the people?
I think I've said a lot. And so I'm hopeful that some of that just resonates and sits with you. Something I mentioned a minute ago is that I have this hope that the next generation will say, I learned about sex from my parents and they did a really great job. I do think that that's possible. We are not living in any day and age but right now. And God tells us that we are made for moments just like this. Like, we are made, you know, in Esther, right? For such a time as this. And that is important. Like, we have the kids we have the neighbors we have, everything is intentional with the Lord. And so really stepping into that wholeheartedly and getting ready to engage and talk about God's purpose and all of it, like, that is eternal. It matters. And so I really just want to leave that last thought of, like, encouraging people to have this talk, not just because it's a good thing to do or that they should or there's so much out there, but because it's such an opportunity to praise God, actually, and praise who he is. And I think that's possible.
Yeah. And I definitely think phrasing it that way, that it's eternal, right? You're doing ministry. You are discipling, stewarding your children well. So I think that's a beautiful way to put it. So thanks again for coming on the pod.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And yeah, as you guys know, you can follow The Parallel at The Parallel Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Remember to kiss the sun, speak the truth in love, and I'll be seeing you guys soon. Bye.
Bye.